Thanks very much for doing this. How old are you?
37.
You're 37.
Yeah.
How long you been doing foreign journalism?
3 years.
Yeah, 3 years?
Yeah.
Was your first foreign gig with Global Post?
No, I was freelancing in Iraq. What happened was second career journalist, started off as a teacher, went back to school in 2007, went to Iraq in 2008 and embedded with U.S. forces and kind of was a freelancer doing stuff like blogging, writing for Indiana newspapers, a couple bigger stories here and there, but yep.
All right. And then you ended up in this. So let's get rolling here, because I think you should probably just, you've been through this a million times, I know, but I do think it's different when people hear your voice telling it. I mean, just talking about when and how you were captured in Libya, what led up to it, just spell that out.
Okay, it was on April 5th. And the four of us decided we wanted to go to the town of Brega, which is where there was some heavy fighting between Gaddafi forces and the rebels. And in the morning, we got out of a rebel vehicle, and some guys told us Gaddafi forces are very close. Well, we immediately got to the side of the road because we thought the shelling would come and hit the road. That's what happens sometimes. It turned out Gaddafi vehicles came over the hill, driving in two heavily armed trucks, began firing machine guns, and the other rebel vehicles turned right around and fled, leaving us there sort of pressed down in the desert, trying to get by any cover we could. Very shortly after the shooting started, I heard Anton, he's a South African photographer, yell, "Help, help." He was, appeared to be a faint cry. I said, "Anton, are you okay?" And there was a lot of shooting over my yelling. He said, "No." And that was the last we heard from him. As these soldiers came closer, shooting at us, essentially, because maybe they thought we were rebels. They might not have known who we were. We weren't able to identify ourselves because they were just shooting directly over anything else. Finally, I jumped up and said, "You know, journalist, struck several times with the butt of an AK-47, punched maybe once, and then tied up and loaded in the back of a Gaddafi vehicle."
You say that they were firing at you, and then did you jump up and say, journalist, or did several of you jump up? What'd you do?
Okay, what happened was Anton was in front. He was closest to the road, therefore closest to the shooting. I was right behind him, and then Claire and Mono were behind me. So I was better able to hear that Anton was wounded, and that he, when I called again, I said, "Anton, are you there?" No response. I think it hit me instinctively that, you know, these guys might just keep on shooting, and that it was better for me to jump up and surrender, at least identify ourselves as journalists. Maybe they didn't know. Jump up, surrender, and, you know, be captured, rather than, you know, accidentally shot.
But they were shooting at you. So when you jumped up, were they shooting at you, and could you have been hit?
Well, that was the risk, right? I mean, that's the whole question. You know, do you wait there and then, you know, systematically get shot down by, you know, 5 or 10 guys? Or do you jump up with your hands up, a kind of universal sign of "I surrender," and maybe they just hit you a couple of times, and that's what happened.
And where did they take you, and what did they tell you they were going to do with you?
They tied us up and took us to a house they had obviously commandeered in Brega. Young soldiers, very young looking, but there started to be some sense of control from somebody. They tried to put a bandage over my head, which was bleeding superficially at the scalp. They kept their guns on us. They had two young guys keep their guns on us and tied up our hands behind our back. But they said, "Hey, you guys are going to Tripoli," which we kind of instinctively knew. From then on, you know, we kind of said, "Okay, what's going to happen to us is kind of what's going to happen to the New York, what happened to the New York Times team that was captured." But, you know, we'll probably be here double the time, we figured, because the NATO strikes had already started. And, you know, we weren't seen as favorably, obviously, by Qaddafi forces once these NATO strikes were hitting them.
Did you ever get a sense that you might not be released?
Fortunately, no. Fortunately, you know, these guys would always say, when we hit Tripoli a few days later, they said, you know, 2 or 3 days you'll be released. Well, of course, they were lying, but it gave you a sense of hope that, you know, what if they had said maybe a year, maybe 2 years? I think my thoughts would have turned much, much, much darker. So I was lucky in that sense.
While you were waiting, how close were you to the NATO airstrikes?
We were in a general prison. That was the second-to-last prison we were in, and it was at the end of April. One night, the airstrikes came extremely close, maybe less than a kilometer, and it was terrifying because the other prisoners, guys who I was actually, you know, friends with, we were all in the cell together, took off a heavy steel door from the bathroom and began using it as a battering ram against the outer cell door. And I thought, wow, you know, we might all get killed if these guys get out too. But it was just kind of this collective hysteria protest thing because the bombs are so close and you feel helpless. You know, you could be bombed in there and there's no way of getting you out. But at the end, we were moved to a villa, if you would believe that. We were moved to a kind of a luxury villa. And we could also hear the bombing quite close there. And, you know, every time we heard the bombing, we said, you know, selfishly, this hurts our case. This is giving us less of a chance, giving them less of an incentive to free us, essentially.
Did you see your fellow captives every day? Were you able to offer support to each other?
It went like this. Claire and I were together for the first 12 days. Unfortunately, Manu was separated in another cell. Then we were taken to a general prison. Claire was put on the woman's side. Manu was in one cell, and I was in a different cell at the far end of the hall. So we could kind of yell to each other, Manu and I, but that's about it. And then we just kind of relied on Libyans to for our conversation and, you know, support for you know, over 2 weeks when that was going on. And it was quite amazing. I mean, these are political prisoners who maybe sent a text message against Qaddafi, or maybe even less. Maybe they were just there because they were from a city and that was in active protest when they were captured.
But you got to spend some time with them, and that actually helped sustain you in a way.
Oh, of course, of course. They were very generous people, these captives. They treated me like guests, like a guest. Gave me, you know, the best bunk bed. The food was initially kind of rough, but, you know, they made sure I had the little piece of chicken that was in the macaroni bowl. This kind of thing that, you know, I mean, talk about somebody that's literally sustaining your morale at that time. It was, you know, they're tremendous.
And did they do that because they felt that you were their connection to the outside world, a world that they felt would be very supportive of them?
I think there was a couple reasons. One, you know, kind of in this kind of Libyan Arab culture, a guest is a guest no matter what. Two, I had been captured in Benghazi, the rebel stronghold, so I was seen as being very sympathetic to their cause, obviously, sort of like on their side. And three, I think, you know, some of the more educated ones knew that I was wanting to tell their story ultimately, you know, and they said, Jim, you know, remember us. Remember us when you get out. Remember to tell our story. And I said, you know, not only is this my job, but, you know, I swear to God that I'll do that.
Did you get any sense of whether the rank and file Libyan soldiers are fully behind Gaddafi or whether they have their own reservations?
It's a good question. They appear to be very behind Gaddafi with their rhetoric and sort of posturing, you know. You know, Gaddafi's, what do they say? They say, Allah, Muammar Libya, God, Gaddafi, Libya, in that order. You know, everything for the leader. Some of them would wear these sort of like big pictures of Muammar on their chests and, you know, kiss it periodically. And, you know, these awful state TV programs where they're just, you know, sort of dancing around with pictures of Muammar. But, you know, that's the police apparatus. That's the, you know, the guards, that's the military, that's the judges even. Interestingly enough, towards the end of my term in the political prison, there seemed to be a loosening up of the security. Captives were able to move between cells a little bit. The food got a little better. Some of these captives said that was an indication that the guards were starting to know which way the wind was blowing, that, you know, they were kind of behind, starting to get behind the captives, in other words, behind the revolutionaries.
Has this changed your gut sense of war or of being in battle?
Gut sense? Well, in a way, yes. I mean, my only experience is a reporter, is as a conflicts reporter, but it's very different to be embedded with, you know, the most highly trained army in the world, the U.S. Army, and being embedded with rebels who haven't even fired a gun a month before. Okay, so that's a huge difference. Because our friend and colleague Anton died, I will forever use a different kind of system when I go out to report on conflicts. I'll forever make sure I check in with my editor every morning and every afternoon. You know, these kind of things that would give you a better chance if you're captured. You know, you can't go through an experience like this where somebody's died and think that, you know, everything would have been fine. You know, you have to reevaluate what you do and how you do it.
Has this given you a different appreciation of the role of a conflict reporter?
Well, it was amazing that some of these conflict reporters in Libya, you know, some really prominent reporters for the New York Times and a New Yorker, they really, you know, first of all, they reported when we were taken. You know, they made sure that news got to Global Post, and Global Post started working. And these guys really circled the wagons for some mid-level freelancers who they didn't need to do. So it really was a tremendous spirit of generosity going around. That was, you know, reporters in Tripoli were trying to make sure that, you know, if they had any influence with the Gaddafi family, that they asked about us. I mean, I guess it's, you know, it gave you a great sense of the camaraderie in these war zones that I'd had before. But, you know, when you're captured, you're truly powerless. And I therefore think that, you know, it's a calling of mine to be a conflict journalist and a conflict reporter. I think it's the, you know, it's exposing the humanity of both sides. I mean, these rebels are not Al-Qaeda, as you know, Gaddafi calls them. They're, a lot of them are middle-class men who are tired of this dictator, this tyrant. And some of them, you know, believe in democracy. You know, some of them want to go to see New York City someday. No normal things normal Americans might want.
All right, Jim. Well, thanks very much. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thanks for putting me on New Hampshire Public Radio. You guys have really kept my parents' spirit up. And, you know, I appreciate everything you guys could have done for also getting my case out there.
All right. Take care.
Take
Good
care.
Luck to you.
Bye.
Bye.